Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is where Hamburg's intelligence officials have been tracking the Tiber Mosque and the city's radicals. They've never been as busy as they are right now.
As I go in, I can't help wondering why Iranian-German Dashti and Afghan-German Siddiqui and the others from the Tiber Mosque weren't stopped.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like a sleeve.
This is the Savage Nation. A mosque in Hamburg, Germany is the heart of a terror plot against the heart of Europe and the heart of America. And those in the media will not even call it by its proper name. They're saying a group of jihadists from the German city of Hamburg. CNN reports that eight Germans are at the center of the Hamburg plot. They know who they are. They know which mosque they pray in, and they let them come and go as they please. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm making a commitment to you right now. I have my hand on a Bible, as in the old days in America, in a court of law. And I swear to tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. I will begin my radio show every day from today on like this. I am putting my hand on my Bible. I promise to tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And now I want to read you something. We are at war. They are at war with us. We are playing defense. They're laughing at the sissies who run America and run Europe. They're laughing at the sissies who run America and run Europe. They're laughing at the sissies who are afraid to kill them. They're laughing at the sissies who sit in rooms in Pensacola with video machines firing missiles at them and won't even launch an army against them when we know where they are. They're laughing at us from their mosques in Hamburg and in London. They're laughing at us from their mosques all over the West. Because they know that we're afraid to touch them, because they know that they are the sacred cow. But I will read you something stronger than a press release from the Department of Homeland Security. I will read you from 2 Samuel, from the Old Testament. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spoke to me, ruler over men shall be the righteous, even as he that ruleth in the fear of God. And as the light of the morning when the sun riseth, a morning without clouds, when through clear shining after rain the tender grass springeth out of the earth. For is not my house established with God? For an everlasting covenant he hath made with me, ordained in all things, and sure for all my salvation, all my desire. Listen to the rest of this. Will he not make it grow? Will the ungodly, they are as thorns thrust away, all of them, for they cannot be taken with the hand. But the man that toucheth them must be armed with iron and the staff of a spear. And they shall be utterly burned with fire in their place. Read your Bible. It wasn't written by Walt Disney. Our God is a vengeful God, not a peace-loving God. Our God is not a she. Our God is not a she-male. Our God is not a nice God. He's a mean God. He's a wrathful God. And if you forget our God is a wrathful God, what you get is the devil in his place. And our enemy knows this. They know that we're running the enemy. Did you hear what I said to you? We're sitting, come in and out of a mosque in Hamburg and go back to Krapistan to train, and then they come back ready to kill you at your airport, and we don't even know, have the guts to stop them because the law says you can't? And you wonder why we're sitting here like this waiting to be hit instead of hitting them first and hitting them so hard that they don't have the capacity to hit back? You don't know how to fight a war? How come your father knew how to fight a war? How come your grandfather knew how to fight a war? How come your grandfather was willing to enlist in the U.S. Air Force and fly in a B-17 on a suicide mission? Don't tell me only the Japanese had kamikaze pilots. Every one of the missions in World War II to the 90th percentile was a suicide mission. But the boys went up there and they did it because they loved America. And take a look at this country today. You won't even name the enemy. You sit here quaking in your boots. We know who they are. We know where they train. And I tell you, did I tell you, I will tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Again, by radical Islam. They threaten us and we sit here in a panic with diarrhea in our pants. Instead of striking them first and striking them hard in the terror camps and wiping them off the planet, we sit here quaking in our boots. And we listen to Homeland Security say, get ready to be hit again. We listen to this invisible CIA under whatever his name is, Panetta on a cooking show 3 weeks ago. The head of the CIA was on a cooking show trying to show he was a nice guy, a kind of friendlier image, when the exact opposite is what the enemy needs right now. Listen to me. Over the weekend, I had a satori, an understanding, a deep one, and here it is. It's about deep conservatism versus small conservatism. Big C, little C. You see, back in the 60s, just when the environmental movement was getting underway, there was a movement to clean up trash along the highways, clean up the streets and the roads, to pick up the dirt. Now, the people who cleaned up the trash on the sides of the highway were well-meaning, and they called themselves ecologists. And later on, there emerged a much more serious movement of environmentalists, and for good or for bad. And they wanted to go beyond just fixing superficial environmental problems. They wanted to try and rid the toxins from foods and waters. And many of them did a very good job up to a point. Sure, they overdid it in some areas, as we all know. But they understood it was more than just garbage on the side of a highway that had to be cleaned up in order to save mankind and save the planet. And these environmentalists called themselves deep ecologists, and they were doing what was known as deep ecology. Today we have the same thing in politics. We have conservatives with a little c like Hannity, O'Reilly, and Limbaugh. These are all little c conservatives. What they are doing is cleaning up the trash left on the sides of the road, by the liberals. But then there are deep conservatives with a big C who are going after the systemic problems, the root of the problems, the source of the toxins caused by the liberals and liberalism. And remember, there's a big difference between a little C and a big C, little conservatives and deep conservatives, as I have spelled out on this show on a regular basis for 16 years. And it all comes to a head in my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, where the true deep conservatism that I am talking about is spelled out for future generations. And I'm asking you to do something. I need you to go to bookstores tomorrow and to demand a copy from the clerk. The Savage Army is being called upon. I am asking you to act to stop the Democrats before it is too late. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. Well, I threw the fire and brimstone at you, and I think many of you got frightened because you'd rather have something softer. I understand that. I understand that. I truly understand you're afraid of fire and brimstone, and you're not used to it. We live in a sort of Jerry Springer type of world, where anybody who asks you a real question is considered a bad guy. And when it tells you you're about to get wasted because you're too weak to defend yourself, is considered a bad guy. And you'd rather not hear it. You'd rather put your head in the sand. So I'm going to ask you something. We're sitting here quaking in our boots waiting for the radical Muslims to blow us up at an airport or in a department store when we know the jihadists came from a Hamburg, German mosque, and we do nothing. So you're now the head of Homeland Security in the United States of America. You now run Homeland Security in the United States of America. Tell me what your prescription is to prevent another attack. And hold nothing back. Hold nothing back. You know, tomorrow I go on a satellite tour for my new book, Trickle Up Poverty. I got to get up early, which is hard for a guy who does a show late in the day. Roanoke, Virginia, their middle market cities, Wichita, Rochester, Pittsburgh, Fort Myers, Detroit, Tucson, San Diego, Cincinnati, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. Okay? But I have a real question for you, a very important question as I go on tour for Trickle Up Poverty. Should I take Teddy with me? Now, don't laugh. There's a reason for this. Should I bring Teddy the poodle with me into the studio when I do my interviews? The reason I ask this is, do you think that Teddy will distract from my message or humanize my message? I tried fire and brimstone, and you won't even call a show. You're afraid of it. So what if I bring Teddy into the TV studio, and at the end of each interview, I say this. I ask my assistant to pass me the dog, and I give a tagline which says, Teddy says keep America from going to the dogs by trickle-up poverty. Or Teddy says, come on, America, don't roll over for Obama. Or at the end of the interview, Teddy's passed to me, and I hold him, and I wave his hand, and I say, Teddy says, keep the liberals on a short leash by trickle-up poverty. So you want to go to the lightweight? You want to go to the lighthearted? You want to go there? I'll go there. I'm asking you a real question. Give me a new tagline for the TV interview with my dog, or do you think it will completely distract from my message of, what is my message? What is my message? What is it, just a book that's put out by Wallbanger or by the Hemorrhoid with nothing in between the covers? It's 110,000 hard words in my book. 110,000 hard words. Let me read you some of the prescriptions in my book for saving America. There are 37 of them. Now compare them to the Republicans. Well, you don't even remember what they said when they put it out 2 weeks ago. One, English only. Two, close the borders. Three, defend the borders. Four, defund and repeal Obamacare. Five, reduce the size and scope of government with specifics. With the exception of the military and defense, Michael says, reduce all departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. Require government employees to speak English and to have achieved at least a high school diploma. That's a shock, isn't it? Six, liquidate TARP. Seven, oil for illegals. Get it from Mexico. Eight, strike down the Anchor Babies law. Nine, deport jailed illegal aliens. 29% of our prisoners are illegal aliens. As of 2008, our federal, state, and local jails are overcrowded with 2.396 million inmates. Of that number, 29% are illegal aliens. They don't even live here. Yet we're paying an average of $29,000 a year to house, feed, clothe, and entertain them. Send them back to their country of origin. 10 of Michael Savage's prescription to save America. Fire Janet Napolitano. 11, use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Stop arresting Irish nuns at airports. Stop frisking older priests at airports. What are you going to do when you have an enemy who might put himself or his own wife in a burqa, put a live baby inside a carriage and load it with dynamite or C4 explosive and wheel it up to a site and blow it up and blow their own child up, thinking that that child's going to get rewarded by Allah in heaven? Tell me what you're going to do with that kind of enemy. Tell me how you fight against it. 12, name the enemy. Identify radical Islam as the enemy. Demand that Attorney General Eric Holder stop scrubbing federal policies and communications of truly descriptive words such as, quote, terrorist and jihad and Islam, and start telling it like it is. Furthermore, don't extend the rights guaranteed to American citizens to enemy combatants. Don't prosecute them in civilian courts. Is that enough for you for right now? That's 12 of 37 ways to save America, all spelled out on pages 303 to 306, 307, 308. Of the most important conservative book of the year, Trickle Up Poverty. It's all in there. I don't mince words. I don't hold anything back. How would you do it? Nick in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Follow the same edits they did in World War II. I send out the Wolverines and execute them on the spot, and they will know there's no place safe for them.
But wait. Where would you send these Wolverines? And wait a minute. In which country?
They're in Germany, and they're in a mosque in Germany. They're out to kill us. And I would work with the German government. If they didn't want to work with us, I'd work with us.
It's interesting that you bring up the Wolverines. First of all, you're a winner of trickle-up poverty. Everyone's a winner today. Anyone who gets on the show with a good call, and we're not just going to put anybody up, is a winner. So you're a winner. You're going to get trickle-up poverty. Let me remind people of what you're talking about, Nick. You explain the Wolverines for a quick second. Go ahead. I know what it is.
They were Nazi sympathizers. These were people, Nazis, that still... wanted to cause trouble for the Allies. They also...
Exactly. Okay, after World War II, stay on the line, you're a winner, Nick. After World War II was won, after the Germans surrendered, after Hitler was dead, after Germany was in rubble, the U.S. Army, as you know, occupied Germany, and the Russians occupied the other side of Germany. But there were holdouts. There were Nazi holdouts who went around blowing up bridges, sabotaging roads, killing American troops, and killing any German mayor, for example, who wanted to cooperate with the American allies and move Germany back to a democracy. They would actually assassinate politicians. The U.S. Army sent out hunter-killer squads of American soldiers of the type we still have, who hunted down the Nazis, and when they found them, they tied them to a post and shot them. They had the authority to kill them on the spot. Now, compare that with Barack Obama's rules of engagement, where they would rather put our men on trial with a court-martial after the fact, after a gunfight in Iraq, we've got men who are still rotting in prison. I've donated money, you've donated money to try to save them from this insanity that started under George Bush. We have to end this. We have to get rid of these lunatics running the country and destroying our military. Yeah, sure, we need Wolverines. We've got them. We've got the Special Forces. We've got the Green Berets. We've got the Army Rangers. We've got people we never heard of. Where are they? What, are they taking sensitivity training? Perhaps Janet Napolitano has them learning how to put on a burqa. You don't know what's going on in this country today under Obama. You have no idea about his attack on our borders, economy, and security, but I do. I study this for a living. You don't. Go ahead and challenge me. Make my day. Go ahead and make my day and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Go ahead. Challenge me. Tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Go ahead. I challenge you to challenge me. Go ahead. Let's have a good debate on the Savage Nation. I've got over 35 pages of references and notes on every chapter and every fact and every statement I make in my book. Every statement in my book is backed up with a reference. I don't just throw them out there. Chapter 10, Obama's War on the Military and on National Security, is a whole chapter. You want me to start with that one today, on Monday? The book's not out till tomorrow. I'll start reading my family stories. Because every chapter begins with what you love the most, the homespun savage stories. When I was a boy, maybe 10 or 11 years old, I loved going to the circus. Whenever the Ringling Brothers Circus came to town, I wouldn't miss it. I didn't go to see the elephants or ride the Ferris wheel. I went for the freak show in the back. In those days, they had genuine freak shows. You know, the conjoined twins, the man with two faces, the bearded lady. In other words, the people of today who became politicians were, in my day, working in the back room of the circus without a Windsor knot. Or let's say that the same people you might find on CNN or MSNBC after some surgery. Page 260.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. We got three or four balls in the air. One, you are the head of the CIA. You are the head of Homeland Security. You're sick and tired of cowering before the radical Muslims. You are told to stop them before they strike. What would you do? That's number one. Number two, on a lighter note, Michael Savage is going on a media tour tomorrow. 11 cities, television. Should he bring Teddy with him? Will it trivialize my message or humanize my message? At the end, Teddy is handed to me, and I hold up my little 10-pounder, and I say, Teddy says, keep America from going to the dogs. In another city, I say, Teddy says, come on, America, don't roll over for Obama. In another city, I end with, Teddy says, keep the liberals on a short leash by trickle-up poverty. Pittsburgh, Andrew, what do you say? Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I love the idea of your having Teddy with you on your book tour, and I wanted to suggest a tagline for you.
Go ahead.
Teddy says, have your liberals spayed or neutered.
Oh, I don't think they're going to like that if I did that on television, do you?
Well.
And you know, and I'll tell you why it's almost a redundancy, because the most of them have been spayed or neutered, Andrew.
True.
I mean, if you look at half of them on MSNB, wouldn't you say most of them have been neutered or spayed?
Oh, definitely in the personality in the thing.
Yeah, I mean, their personality has been spayed. Take a look at CNN, they report on their website. 8 Germans arrested in terror plot. 8 Germans. They won't even say Muslim. They won't even say radical jihadist. They say 8 Germans. So what, we're supposed to hate Germans now?
No, we know.
You're a winner. Stay on the line, Andrew. You get a free copy of what? TUP. Tell us what it is. Trickle Up Poverty. Andrew's a winner. Anyone else who makes it onto the show today wins. You can call. Doesn't matter. Mean you're going to get on. Let me finish reading from Chapter 10, Obama's War on the Military and on National Security. Okay? So I talk about the freaks. Breast on one side. Oh, I didn't get up to that. A few months after I went to Ringling Brothers, I was working in my father's little antique store on the Lower East Side of New York. Late one afternoon, just before closing, in walks a Ringling Brothers circus performer, a guy from the freak show. I remembered seeing him. I mean, how could you forget a guy like this? He was billed as the half man, half woman. He had a breast on one side and not on the other side. And he had happened to live over on Long Beach when he wasn't traveling with the circus. Now imagine my surprise store in my father's store. So I watch him. He orders a couple of large pieces, and then he asks my dad to deliver them. Like I said, Dad had a small store. After work, he delivered his own goods. He didn't have a delivery boy. I was the kid. I go along on the ride, whether it was in the DeSoto or later on in the Cadillac Series 62, with the merchandise piled in the back. My job was to lug the bronzes inside the door. I'll never forget this as long as I live. We pulled up late at night because this guy didn't like to come out during the day. Doors are shut, blinds are drawn, porch light off. My father rings the bell. We're standing there in the dark waiting. He rings again. Me? I'm wondering what his house is going to look like inside. As a kid with a sizable imagination, my mind is churning with the possibilities. What kind of bizarro stuff would we see? Did he have a three-legged circus? More than that, was he a dangerous person? Or did he just look scary? Part of me wasn't so sure. I was ready to find out. Dad hits the buzzer a third time. Finally, we hear who's there from behind the closed door. Dad tells him to open the door, but he can't. He can only open it up a little crack. Why? Turns out there was too much stuff in the way blocking it. So we wait some more time while he moves stuff around and then invites us in. Following my father's lead, I squeezed inside and saw his house was littered with odd objects cast about in no particular order. I am talking about hundreds of statues and paintings covering the floor. By the looks of it, this guy lived alone and would buy one beautiful thing after another. He just randomly put them on the floor like a giant warehouse. That night, riding home over the empty Southern State Parkway, I couldn't help but think about my first public persona as one of the oddball members of the circus. But I had been wrong. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought he would have been a collector of fine art and statues. I mean, he may have been physically hard to look at, but he wasn't an ugly person. He had a genuine appreciation for beauty, and he decided to surround himself with beautiful things as much as possible, even if it was in a compulsive way. In other words, I learned first impressions are often misleading. You cannot assume people are the way they're portrayed to be in public. In the case of Barack Obama, the analogy works in the reverse. On the outside, he's a well-dressed man. There's certainly nothing freakish or sinister-looking about him. But that first impression is likewise misleading. When you pull back the curtain and see the monstrous things Obama, the destroyer, has done and is doing, you realize this president, his agenda, and his policies are to be feared because he is putting the survival of a nation on the line. Page 262. Why do I say that? As I'll document in a moment, Barack Hussein Obama is dismantling, disarming, and demoralizing our military. Dismantling, disarming, and demoralizing our military. In this chapter, you'll see how this man is systematically dismantling our nuclear defense through an unnecessary treaty with Russia, disarming the ability of our troops to fight and win wars through a maze of politically correct rules of engagement, and demoralizing our valiant young men and women on the front lines. No question our troops are brave. They're doing their jobs as the best fighting force on the planet. They are not the problem. And yet, as you'll also see momentarily, they get nailed to a cross when they do their job too well. The blame for this war in the military lies with our president of unknown origin, whose loyalties, based upon his actions, don't appear to lie with the country that elected him. I also blame Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who have been reduced to empty suits. They're basically little more than a gaggle of Stepford wives in Obama's harem, there to do his bidding. Whatever Obama says, they do, even though Obama never served in the military and remains doubtful he has ever fired a Daisy BB gun in his life. How else can you explain the fact that these men in tights let Obama kill production of the F-22 Raptor fighter jet, one of the best fighter planes in the Air Force's arsenal? Forget about the fact that these jets are considered to be, quote, the most technologically advanced fighter ever made. That means nothing to this president. Instead, Obama justified shooting down the jets, saying, quote, at a time when we're fighting two wars and facing a serious deficit, this would have been an inexcusable waste of money. Close quote. Quote number three. Now, I want to get this straight with you right now. If we had had a president, or shall I say a Britain that had a leader in 1939 like this, they never would have developed the Spitfire, and they would have lost in the Battle of Britain. Britain would have fallen to Germany, and Germany would have conquered Britain. And let's get this straight. President Obama is spending trillions of dollars on ineffective, wasteful economic stimulus packages and trillions of dollars more to socialize health care and is hoping to pass some sort of costly cap and trade measure. But he didn't think twice about making America more vulnerable in order to trim a relatively paltry $1.75 billion from the defense budget. Does that make any sense? Constitutionally speaking, one of the president's top priorities is to defend our nation, not turn it into a socialist wealth fair state. What's more, by scrapping the F-22s, he's saving a meager one-third of 1% of the 2010 defense program. Quote number four. This is a profound military blunder. Why? It's all in Obama's war on the military and on national security and trickle-up poverty. I have the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'm Michael Savage. Sacramento, Jacob, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I think that the liberals will try to use Teddy against you and somehow turn your book's message against you by bringing the dog with you. I think it's too serious of a... Your book's too serious of a message, and it needs to be put out there, and I think that they'd somehow turn it against you.
How? What would you do if you were... Take the devil's advocate's position. Let's say you're one of the wacko anti-American freaks on MSNBC, and I appear, and I have Teddy the dog with me, and I try to humanize my message with this cute little mascot of the Savage Nation. What do they do?
I think they somehow turn it against you, make it look like a mockery, say that it's not serious. This guy's carrying around a little dog with him, and I think they somehow try to use it against you. I mean, I couldn't get in the side of their mind because I think their mind's too twisted on that, especially that station.
I hear you, but I thought it would be fun at the end of the interview to have my assistant pass me the dog, and I wave his little paw, and I say, Teddy says, come on, America, don't roll over for Obama. Well, the thing is that they probably cut it out because it's too much fun.
Yeah, or they
Well, you're a winner anyway. You win a copy of TUP if you can tell us what TUP means. What's TUP mean?
Trickle-up poverty.
You win. Stay on the line. Ted in Chicago, you're next up. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind, Ted?
Dr. Savage, long-time listener, first-time caller. Your 37 points that you got in the book, that should be a guide, that should be a rule for our next president. And only then, if he abides by those rules, he should be able to become a president.
I agree with you 1,000%. In fact, one of the reasons I wrote this book is not so it should come out as a hot flash for, let's say, this election. I want this to become a model for the next presidential debate. And if we get a Republican like Romney or Palin, and they're soft on radical Islam, or they're soft, or don't even mention the problem with illegal immigrants, or they're soft on the decimation of our military, tell me what good that is. That means they're conservatives with a little C.
You're doing a great job, Dr. Savage.
Teddy, you're a winner. Ted, stay on the line. You're a winner of trickle-up poverty. I'll tell you the truth, ladies and gentlemen. I sometimes wonder if we can keep America from going into the perigee, into its decline, to the low point. I know we hit our apogee quite a while ago. I would say we were at our apogee maybe in 1967, 66, just at the beginning, really. The Vietnam War started really earlier than that. But before the Vietnam War really got bad was when America was at its apogee. And I would say every year since then, I've seen us going into a decline. Have we hit the perigee? Is there more decline to come? You betcha. Can you stop it? Yes, you can. There's only one way to stop it, and it's a stopgap measure. You've got to throw the Democrats out. Now, look, I know the Republicans were a problem for 8 years. I know who they are. I know that they're run by K Street. I know that they're as corrupt as the Democrats to the 80th percentile. I know all of this, and you know it too. That's why the Tea Parties are here. And they're trying to elect good candidates who are real conservatives with a big C, unlike the little C conservatives that we've gotten used to. I get it. But how are you going to motivate your friends and your neighbors and your family to go out to vote for number one in November? Go out and vote. Well, I told you that you can get them by talking to them. You know how to do it. I'll be right back. Tup, tup, tup. Don't be a schmuck by tup, tup, tup. New York, WOR. Teresa, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. You're doing a great job. I just want to say bring that poodle, and that'll drop a lot of guards, and they'll listen to you.
Well, the problem, I mean, I thought about it, but there's a plus and a minus. You know, like they can say his message isn't serious, and then they could dismiss the whole thing that it's just a gimmick, which it isn't. It's 110,000 hard thought words, highly referenced. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people out there who never heard of me, who are not really interested in politics, who watch daytime television. And they may see a guy, he's up there, he's talking about the economy and, you know, keep it very simple and basic, which I'm going to do. My main message is the economy, and Obama added more to the national debt in the first 19 months than all presidents from Washington through Reagan combined. I mean, that's going to be my main message, is the economy. I mean, I think the rest is too difficult, don't you think? So I'll keep it simple, stupid. I'll use the KISS theory. But I figure after the 6 minutes, when we go around this a little bit, I bring, you know, Teddy comes in from Screen Right, and they go, right? I mean, I think it would be a good thing, but on the other hand, it could backfire.
Well, see how it goes. Well, you'll have
Teresa, I know why you called. You want a copy of Top. Stay in the line. You win one. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You are the head of the CIA. You are the head of Homeland Security. Instead of going to a baseball game with a hat on backwards, instead of going on a cooking show to show that you're a nice guy, what would you do if you were assigned the job of stopping radical Islamic terrorism from occurring here in America again? How would you do it? And be very clear about it. I'm asking you. You're going to take the big C approach or the little C approach? You're going to take the big L approach or the little L approach? How would you do it? Or shall I take Teddy or not take Teddy? Yes or no? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Who's saying I shouldn't? Someone said I shouldn't. There's a woman who said, I'm afraid Petta will come after me because if I bring him in there, I'm afraid that the AFDL will come after me, the American Federation of Dog Labor, and they will say that I have underpaid him or I didn't pay him for his mileage or I worked him, you know, beyond 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You know, you got to be very careful today with the unionization of employees. Linda in Sacramento, California, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How are you? Actually, it's Brenda.
Go ahead.
I just want to let you know, your trickle-up poverty book, I can't wait out to run out and get it. Your 37 points, all I heard was what you said in the car when I was picking up the kids at school. And I got to tell you, I'm with you 100%. You're putting your hand on the Bible every morning and giving that message out there, amen to you.
Now, you know what I said today? I'd be very frank with you. I'm going to be very clear with my audience. I mean, this is a very different kind of show. I am a little nervous. I'm trepidatious to go forth this week. I'm calling it Hell Week. I've told my family, this is Hell Week for me. This is the equivalent of trying to graduate from graduate school and taking final exams. You name it. Whatever you've gone through, believe me, this is Hell Week for me. And that is because not only have I been banned by Fox News, but the media that is having me is not going to be very friendly, I can guarantee you. They have made me into a bigger enemy than Osama bin Laden, which confirms one thing, which is that liberalism is a mental disorder. That they would take a man like Michael Savage, who, if there ever was a man who loved America, if there ever was a man who was patriotic, it is me. Yes, it is me. And they've turned me into a bigger threat to the survival and security of America than Osama bin Laden and the radical Islamists. If that does not tell you all about the media, I don't know what will. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Pittsburgh, PA, Janet, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. I'm voting against you bringing Teddy.
Tell me why.
I really think it's going to dilute your message. I think it's too important a message to get out to the people. However, I do think during the interview, toward the end, you might be able to mention the fact. But to actually bring Teddy on, I just think it would dilute the message.
Really? You think that if I go so heavy on the economy and the borders and the security and then I bring up a dog, it's going to look too hokey?
Right. But you know what? However, I do like the idea, but I don't think I would actually bring the dog on. I just think...
Yeah, but you can't just mention a dog. I mean, either you bring it on TV or you don't.
Well, yes, but you can mention the fact. So you know what? I had thought about bringing Teddy out.
No, it would have no impact because they wouldn't. They don't know Teddy. You know Teddy. My radio audience loves Teddy. Teddy is one of the most popular dogs in America. Teddy is as well known as Lassie was in his early days. So the fact is, is that this guy is a good salesman. Why not use him? Stay on the line. You win a copy of Tup if you can tell me the title.
I can. Trickle Up Poverty.
You win. You're a winner. Now, all the rest of you, you know, a lot of you are very upset with what's going on in the country. I need you to go into the bookstore tomorrow. If you're going to let one of the comedians, one of the liberal comedians' books beat mine tomorrow on the bestseller list, then we've lost. But if you go out tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday and you buy a copy, or you buy two copies or three copies and give them to your friends and neighbors, the book will go to the top. It'll send the strongest message you can to the Democrats. Oh, they got the message from the Tea Parties. They're running scared. But you need to keep firing shots at them. You need to show them that another real Big C conservative book is popular in America. Now is the time for all good people to act. Now. 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 I predict this will be the last nonfiction book I write. I will not write another one. It's too much stress. I don't need it. That's all I'm going to say to you. I don't want to write anymore. This was my last book. Somebody said to me, why did you write this book? Why have you been through it for a year? Why did you put yourself through this hell? Why are you going to do a book tour? What do you need this for? They know I don't need it for the money. And I said, I did it because I want to change the course of human events. I want to alter the election in November with this book. You know, there's a lot more to the story than I've been able to tell you. And when I come back, I will tell you about the story behind the story of Trickle Up Poverty. How it came to be, why it came to be, and why the publisher jumped at it and put so much behind it. Why they printed 150,000 copies, which are going to be dispersed across America's bookstores tomorrow.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Far we have fallen from boys who enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in World War II to fly what was suicide missions over Germany in B-17s and B-24s to the media today, where ABC reports the following. 8 Germans killed in Pakistan drone attack. Germans, they're calling them. Not Muslims, not radical Muslims, not Islamists. 8 Germans killed in Pakistan drone attack. Europe terror alert was sparked by Germans, says ABC, training in Pakistan. They will bend over backwards to not say the I word, to not say the M word. That's the ABC of it today. We're sitting here waiting to be hit by the new Hitlers. The new Nazis are waiting to strike us, shoot your children down in an airport. And we can't strike first. Can you imagine a nation sitting like this? No wonder they're emboldened. No wonder they're not afraid of us. They have the head of Homeland Security who goes on television shows to show she's nice. They have the head of the CIA goes on a cooking show 2 weeks ago and tastes some pasta to show he's nice. Would you fear them? Would you fear a military that you know you could set up for court-martial if they do their job too well by putting your wife with a baby carriage with C4 explosive at a checkpoint in Afghanistan or Iraq? And when they go after the wife, who isn't the wife but another jihadist, and there's no baby in the carriage, then maybe they'll put their baby in the carriage at the C4. What do they care? They'd blow up their own baby. How are you going to beat them? How are you going to beat them with these rules of engagement? Tell me how you would do it. I don't care whether you're a liberal or conservative. It doesn't matter about your race. How would you do it? Do you want to live or do you want to die? Are they your enemy or are they your friend? You haven't learned yet by trying to placate them? You're never going to win by placating them? What does it take? Another 9/11, but in spades? Something bigger by a hundredfold? I feel as though I'm talking to myself. I feel as though I'm just yelling at myself in a room. I feel as though no one hears me. You have no idea the frustration of a man who actually studies the disease. It would be like an oncologist who opens up a body and sees a cancer that's spread so far, he doesn't know what to do but sew the body back up. But I'm not willing to give up on America. I'm not willing to give up on the cancer of liberalism. I'm a part-time gardener. Beautiful flowering plants. I have a camellia tree in a pot I've had for 15 or 20 years. So the other day I discovered there's a large fern growing in it. A really strong fern. You know, the spores blew in and it grew, but the roots are so deep that the plant itself is looking very sick. I didn't notice it was mixed in with a whole bunch of other plants. And I started to try and cut out and pull out the fern. Well, I could cut the surface of the fern plant off rather easily, even with a scissor. But I couldn't pull the roots of the fern out. They're so deeply embedded in the soil of the flowering plant that was so beautiful that produced the gorgeous flowers, the camellia flowers that I love so much. I have to go in with a deep stick. I have to go in and cut the cancer out. I have to cut out the fern's roots. I may have to kill some of the roots of the plant that I love so much in order to do it. And I don't know whether the plant will survive after I perform this little bit of surgery. The analogy is not so meek. The analogy is not so crude to what has gone on in America. The crippling disease of liberalism has rendered us almost incapable of defending ourselves against the virulent cancer of radical Islam. We now have a president who worries more about the Arab street than he does about the American street. We have a director of Homeland Security who worries more about returning military veterans and members of the Tea Party than she does about radical jihadists chanting across the globe. Michael Savage, stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. You have a choice tomorrow. It's in a bookstore. Do you want to buy it or not? Or you're going to say, oh, he's just doing it to make a buck. He's done it for 16 years just to get rich. He don't really mean any of that stuff. He's really this. He's really that. Go ahead. Say what you want. Say what you want. It doesn't matter to me because I know the truth. And I will say again what I said at the beginning of the show. I'll say it again. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. I've had this Bible with me for 25 years. It's got more post-its in it than it does pages. I've reached that point. People have seen it. I will bring it into the TV studios tomorrow when the book tour starts. I'm not going to hold it up because I understand people will laugh at it. The atheists in the media wouldn't even get it. They think it's a joke, a stunt. But I'm going to have it with me. I'm going to carry it with me. It's going to be part of the water and the orange juice and the bagel and whatever else we bring in there for the 4 hours after sitting there and do the tour. I'm going to put my hand on that book before the lights go on, and I'm going to say a prayer to myself. It's going to say, Michael promised to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And don't fall down to the level should they attack you. Don't let them do it to you again. Sitting here waiting for the possible terrorist attack in Europe. We even know what mosque they train in. And we do nothing. Nothing. The Germans know what mosque in Hamburg they all come from. They knew they went in and out, in and out. They left the mosque. They went to the Waziristan. They come back, and the Germans don't even arrest them. Germans don't arrest them because they're so concerned about human rights in Germany. God forbid that they should assert their masculinity or their nationalism. God forbid that the liberals get frightened, that they should go into a mosque and pull them out by their hair and throw them into a dark cell before they kill their women and children. God forbid they should act like men again in Germany. God forbid that a liberal on television in Germany gets excited. Online chatter among jihadist websites last week. Could another terrorist banding together in anticipation of terror attack plans in Europe? Really? And the government's saying that they're concerned with this level of chatter. And they're concerned about U.S. interests in Europe. And what are we doing about it? sitting here shaking in our boots, terrified to take preemptive a strike against them. Oh, there are things that could be done that your grandfather would have done. I can guarantee you if we had Patton, if we had more Patton and less patent leather in the security apparatus, believe me, we wouldn't be. They'd be hiding behind their wife's skirts. But we're sitting here shaking, waiting to be hit again. And so I feel as though I'm just talking to myself. I feel as though one man can't do very much. You can only do so much. I did write my book. I do want it to sell. I want it to be on the number one on the list. I want it to stay there. I want the message to be loud and clear across America and across the world that America has turned to the right. That America wants to stop Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. That's right. I want it to happen. With God's will and your listenership, it shall. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So I have a 37-point plan for saving America. I've read you some of them, from English only to, I forget where we ended off, 11, use profiling to prevent terror attacks, 12, name the enemy, 13, rewrite the rules of engagement, 14, save the U.S. Navy SEALs, 15, reinforce the military infrastructure, we must refund the F-22 fighter jets, Obama has cut from the budget and increased the number of ships, subs, and missiles. 16, pay raise for the military personnel. 17, silence the Hitler of Iran. 18, impose tariffs on China. You won't hear that coming from the Republicans, will you? We must draw a line in the sand with regard to China in order to loosen their stranglehold on our economy by imposing a 20% tariff on all goods produced in China. That tariff should be raised by 5% each year that China refuses to revalue its currency. That's page 305 of Trickle Up Poverty. If you think this isn't a hard-hitting book with ideas, you're mistaken. 19, offer health savings plans. 20, institute a flat tax. 21, keep the estate tax at zero. 22, say no to the VAT tax. 23, reduce pay and pensions for civil service workers. 24, defend the Defense of Marriage Act. 25, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. I'll spell it out for you later on this week. Because I have social ideas in the book, not just fiscal ideas. You know, the Republicans were very big on this and that, but they said nothing about the social wars that have been going on. 26, make abortions illegal. With the exception of the physical survival of the mother to be determined by two licensed medical doctors. Require NORPLAN for all women on welfare of childbearing age. You hear that revolutionary statement? At the very least, prohibit taxpayer-funded abortion through organizations such as Planned Parenthood. Have you heard the Republicans take this issue on? No. 27, end affirmative action. 28, limit welfare benefits. Do you know what just came out on welfare? You're not going to believe what I'm going to read to you. It's as though the book predicted this. You're not going to believe what I'm reading to you. $69 million in California welfare money spent out of state. Nearly $69 million in welfare money meant to help California's neediest families, was spent or withdrawn at locations such as Hawaii, Las Vegas casinos, and cruise ships from Miami. The finding reported today in the Los Angeles Times is based on data compiled since 07 by the California Department of Social Services. The biggest chunk of out-of-state money, $11 million, was spent at casinos or withdrawn from ATMs in Las Vegas. The paper said there were also questionable transactions in Hawaii, Miami, and Guam. You hear this? So when Michael says in 28, limit welfare benefits, he knows what he's talking about. 29, voting reform. 30, boot the czars. 31, put the brakes on GM. 32, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Oh boy, is that a big story on how to rein in Wall Street. 32, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. 33, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule. So if you think that I'm weak on Wall Street, you're mistaken. Reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule, 33. 34, privatize the regulation of Wall Street. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. 36, institute tort reform. That means rein in the vermin called trial lawyers. And finally, in trickle-up poverty, 37, run the country like a business, not an empire. You never heard anything like this, have you? It's all new. It's fresh. It's alive. It's original. It's from Michael Savage. It's not just my picture with empty pages. Obama added more to national debt in the first 19 months than all presidents from Washington through Reagan combined, says government data. Run the country like a business, not an empire. Did you hear this? Oh, yeah, he inherited $1 trillion debt from the first socialist president that we had, George Bush. Bush was a socialist through and through. I said it all through his administration. If you listen to the show, I called George Bush a fiscal socialist for the last year and a half of his administration. I saw what he was doing. I saw how he built up the federal government. I saw what he was doing. But you didn't want to hear me. Many of you stopped listening to me. You said I was wrong. You didn't like it when I said it. Because you are listening to the little C's. You don't even know what a big true conservative is. You think that the little C is going to save America. You are wrong, my friends. You are wrong. We need the big C. Deep conservatism, not little conservatism. Deep conservatism, not picking up the trash on the side of the road and calling it environmentalism. You need to get the toxins out of the soil. You need to get the toxins out of the water. You need to get the toxins out of the air. The toxins put into the body politic by liberalism, the cancer and the poison that has seeped through every aspect of this society. I don't pull any punches. I'm not a middle of the roader. I see things as they are. We are in the last days of the great state of America. I say state, I mean that generically. You know what I mean. The last days of Pompeii. The ticket has exploded. When you see a man like Obama the Destroyer inside the White House, you understand how far this country has fallen. When you see a great nation with the strongest military on earth quaking in its boots, when a group of Muslim fanatics are threatening to blow up airports or hotels in a Mumbai-style attack, you know we're in the last days of Pompeii, because we don't even strike them first. They even know what mosque they prayed in Hamburg. They let them come and go as they pleased in Germany. A nation as powerful as Germany is to this day, with brave men in the military and in their intelligence services, begging the liberals to take the gloves off and let them go in there and pull them out by their hair before they kill somebody. They don't do anything. They're afraid that they'll be called racist or fascist before the European Union. They're sitting there quaking in their boots. And we have Obama here in the White House selling the Democrats as the salvation for America. Whether it will become come in time and whether it will be big enough to save us in November, I don't know. I can only pray so. I'm trying to play a role in this. You know, I open the book, give me 60 seconds, with this author's note. President Obama is like a destructive child who takes apart a priceless watch that was carefully passed down to him. Without regard for the value of what he holds, he recklessly scatters the pieces on the floor and then can't put them back together again. Failing to learn from his mistakes, this destructive child moves on to another room where he finds another watch to take apart. Once again, he cannot put the pieces back together. That doesn't stop him from tearing apart yet another costly timepiece until all that's left are the pieces of discarded, functionless watches lying at his feet. What's worse is that nobody steps in to stop him before he destroys again. I've been watching in stunned amazement that Obama the Destroyer systematically takes apart America piece by piece, while the complicit fifth column government, media complex, and the lapdog political leaders remain silent. Barack Hussein Obama is tearing down everything that was built before this man was even born. Look no further than the fundamental requirement to preserve America's borders and national security, I write. And you can read it yourself. Do you see what this petty dictator has done? Yeah, this petty dictator, that's what I call him. I take the chances. I lay it all on the line. Everything's out there. Trickle-up poverty, stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. You have a choice here. You can read it, or you can ignore it. You can carry it. You can show it. You can circulate it, or you can ignore it. Your choice.
Savage.
Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and we won't go.
The greatest threat of all is the undermining of our Constitution and the systematic attack against the inalienable rights of the citizens of this nation. Rights that are guaranteed by our Constitution. But the vanguard of this insidious attack is the Tea Party.
So here's Harry Belafonte, lifetime man who reveres Chavez, saying that the greatest threat to America's Constitution is the Tea Party. He was at the so-called Peace and Love rally yesterday on the National Mall, the so-called One Nation rally, where there was nothing but hatred and the vile, vile violence. And he calls them a band of misguided citizens, the Tea Parties. Listen to the rest of this lunatic in clip 8.
This band of misguided citizens is moving perilously close to achieving villainous ends. This gathering here today...
Shut up, lunatic. Here's a man who saluted Chavez, the dictator, and he's calling the true grassroots movement of America, the Tea Parties, a villainous group and violating the rights guaranteed by the Constitution. He's got everything backwards. We're at war. We're at war. There's a war in America. This man, this imposter, and God help us, the imposter, the college teacher, with his rhetoric, with his verbal rhetoric, loosening lunatics like Harry Belafonte attacking the true grassroots movement of America, calling them the villains. Not Acorn, not the rent-the-mobs of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson that the country had to put up with for years. They weren't the villainous mobs. No, the real Americans, the taxpayers and the business owners, they're the villains. They're the villains. How do they even listen to a man like him? Obama the destroyer has permitted them to climb out of the woodwork. That's how. Okay, I made my point. Paul, New York, WOR, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Mike, from one big seat to another, I think you shouldn't bring the dog, but I think you should wear a picture of Teddy on a hat. This way, you won't lose the content, but you'll get your message across that you have that big heart that you do.
What if I say that my message is TUP, which is trickle up poodles, that the only solution for America is for more poodles?
You know, the content is so heavy duty, Mike.
But Paul, look, let's be clear. Guys like you know the message, understand the message, can accept the message. Do you think that the people in middle America are ready to hear about Obama the destroyer and what the Democrats are actually doing to this country?
The people in the middle, yes. The people that we've already lost, they're never coming back, Mike. But we don't have to worry about them. We can accomplish what we need to accomplish with that middle fringe. But
that's who I'm talking to on the book tour tomorrow and Wednesday and the days after that. It's going to be the non-Savage Nation audience. It's the people who are, let's say, in the middle, who don't really know the damage that Obama the destroyer has committed and is committing and what he intends to do. They don't really understand it. They don't really understand it. But you understand it. You're getting a free copy of TUP if you can tell me what it stands for.
It's trickle-up poverty, Mike, and it's
going to... I tell you, I can tell already the book is going to do well for one reason. Thank you. Stay on. You win a copy. I'll tell you why. Because remember my title, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder? You know, people couldn't even pronounce it. There was something about the iambic pentameter about it. It was hard to repeat. It didn't flow as well as TUP. I hear already people, they would like say, okay, name it, what is it? They couldn't do it. So, good. I can see already the iambics are in there. So I think the solution is TUP, which is trickle-up poodles. A poodle in every pot. No, we don't live in China. I'm sorry. A poodle for every tot. That's the answer. A poodle for every tot. That's the solution to America. By the way, there's only one religion that I know of on the earth that hates dogs. How is that possible? Is there something there? Did I touch a raw nerve just now? I mean, I take my dog everywhere. Took him to a restaurant. He sleeps in my bed. I don't have any fleas. Beautiful animal. Great creature. Cleaner than most human beings. Friendlier. More trustworthy. Wouldn't stab me in the back. He's there for me when I need him. In the middle of the night when I reach out, I talk to him. He's there. Yet there's a group of people on earth who hate dogs. In fact, in Milwaukee, Somalis, who are practitioners of this religion, refused to take blind people who had seeing-eye dogs. And take a guess what happened. Instead of throwing those bums out of the state, instead of throwing those bums back to the hellhole they came from, instead of taking the taxi licenses away from those rotten bums who said, no, we're not even going to drive blind people because the dogs violate our beliefs. Do you know what they did in Milwaukee? They catered to them. They catered to the Somalis. And then a year later, their sons went back to some crapistan somewhere to learn how to kill and bomb. You wonder why? Because they spit on you. They look at you like you're a jerk. They say, you know, we're living in a country where there are no men. There's no men here. Everyone's afraid of us. Whatever we want, we get. Whatever we want, we get. We want foot baths in the airport. Even though it's a violation of church and state, we got foot baths. We don't want to drive around blind people because we hate dogs. They said, okay, you don't have to drive around blind people. So our son said, why do I want to work hard and up and take over the country? Don't you see how this is working? You can't put two and two together? Here's a headline from ABC News. Drone strike kills 8 Germans in northwest Pakistan. How do you like that? And I thought World War II was over. But according to the media, the Germans are still our enemies. It's not radical Muslims. No, it's Germans. It's not radical Islam, not radical Muslims. It's Germans. Apparently, World War II didn't end to the people at CNN or ABC. The Germans are our enemies. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a real problem. Very real problem. It's not fake. It's not a joke. Chicago, Margaret, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Okay. So, well, I think you should bring Teddy on the air. And if he can bark on command, when you're done with the line, you turn to Teddy and go, hey, what do you think, Teddy? And Teddy goes, bark, bark. Like he agrees with what you said.
Well, I don't know if he can take the lights either. I may have to get him a pair of sunglasses.
That would be even better.
I'll tell you something. Teddy can walk on his rear legs like a little bear because, you know, poodles have a strange genetic adaptation. I don't know if you know this. They can stretch their rear legs out directly like a... Have you ever seen them? They can stand on their hind legs and stand straight up. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
People didn't know that. Yeah, they have a weird thing, like when they lay on their back in bed, they push their feet straight out like a person. It's very odd. And by the way, they're hypoallergenic dogs. You don't sneeze from their fur. You win a copy of TUP, Margaret, only if you can tell me what it stands for.
Trickle up poverty.
You see, it's easy. It's easy. TUP, TUP, TUP. Don't be a schmup. 1-800-449-8255. Missouri. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yeah, Michael, I was thinking if this truly is your last book, maybe you could consider starting a Savage clothing line and call it Tupperware in honor of Trickle Up Poverty.
Trickle Up Poverty Wear? Now, how would that work? What would people wear, like old clothes?
Well, possibly recycled, because we can't go out and buy new stuff, obviously, since it's being taxed.
Well, I grew up wearing dead man's pants, as I wrote about in Psychological Nudity a few books ago. So, I mean, there's nothing, no shame in wearing used clothing. There are remnant stores all over the country and used clothing stores. They've been around quite a long time. There's nothing new about that. How many people do you think are wearing beautiful new dresses, bought them used somewhere? Because a lot of wealthy people wear them once and sell them. Did you know that?
That's right, yeah.
Well, thanks very much. You're a winner of TUP. Stay on the line. Everyone's a winner today. Everyone's a winner. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I started this show talking about deep ecology versus surface ecology, as opposed to just cleaning trash up off the side of the road. We've evolved as a society. We realize it's not just about the dirt. We need people to clean the junk off the side of the highway. But there are environmental toxins in the soil that we've hopefully gotten many out, much more to go, and toxins in our water, and that was called deep ecology. And I try to tell you that we have the same thing in politics. We have conservatives with a little C like O'Reilly, Hannity, and Limbaugh, who are really just cleaning up the rubbish on the sides of the roads put there by liberals. And then there are people with the big C, deep conservatives, like myself, who are going after the systemic problems, the root problems. And remember, there's a big difference between a little C and big C in politics, as there is in the environmental movement. One of the things that separates people on the big C from the little C are those of us who are willing to take on the social issues. Notice in the Republican Plan for America, there was not one mention of the social issues, whether it be abortion or the Defense of Marriage Act. It's as though it didn't exist. right? Well, I'm going to read a story to you that may as well come right out of my book. It just came out, but I predicted it. Art exhibit in Colorado shows Jesus in a sex act with another man. An exhibit at a Colorado art gallery is stirring up outrage and critics say it depicts Jesus Christ in a sexual act. The Misadventures of the Romantic Cannibals by a Jerk Artist is a panel in which blah, blah, blah. So it's a lithograph. It's at a tax-funded Loveland Museum Gallery in Loveland, Colorado, part of an exhibit of prints. The word orgasm appears besides Jesus' head. Now, the schmuck artist who created this is a professor at Stanford University, to top it all off. In addition to being a debased pornographer, the so-called artist says, I'm surprised by the response. He said, after all, the exhibit also shows comic book characters, Mexican pornography, Mayan symbols, and it's about corruption. And it really shouldn't get anyone mad. It's really just art, a publicly funded institution. It's all a joke, and they mock it. They mock Jesus because you Christians have turned the other cheek so many times, you don't even have a cheek left. There's nothing left on your faces anymore because you misinterpreted the gospel. You've had one liberal preacher after another tell you, turn the other cheek, when you didn't even understand what Jesus was saying. Jesus never said, don't be militant. Jesus never said, turn yourself into a wimp to be kicked around by everybody on the planet, every dirtball, every degenerate, every pornographer. He never said that. I've had theologians on this show over the years who said I'm 100% right. Maybe they say it in more eloquent terms than I do. Maybe they say it a little less forcefully. But they said Jesus never said that you should become so passive that you can be stepped on like a dirt, like a doormat. A few weeks ago, a man wanted to burn a book. The book was called the Quran. It's only paper. After all, it's only paper. It didn't go to the original source. It was a paper, a reprint. They threatened to blow the world up for burning one book, the Quran. And the president stepped in. Mayor stepped in. Everyone said, oh, you can't do that. It's provocative. You're an evil right-wing Christian's maniac, fanatic. But we'll not wimp. You Christians have become nothing. The whole world mocks you. The whole world laughs at you. The whole world is no longer afraid of you. You inherited the kingdom of God, and you let this kingdom turn into hell because you misinterpreted the Gospels. You think that the Gospels tell you to turn the other cheek, so you take it literally? Well, there's a lot of literal things in the Bible that we're not supposed to take literally, are we? Aren't we told 1,000 times not to take a lot of things literally in the Bible? How many times have I told you I'm not a biblical absolutist? I've said it to you 1,000 times. If I interpreted everything in the Bible literally, oh my God, you talk about fire and brimstone. So there's a modern interpretation of biblical precepts. When you read, turn the other cheek, what does it mean? It means a lot of things. It doesn't mean turn into a wimp. It doesn't mean let people stamp on your religion and turn it into a doormat. It doesn't mean you should let this filthy, degenerate, pornographic artist piece of garbage from Stanford turn Jesus into a symbol of perversion. And then they mock you after you say something. They call you the bigot. They say you're not sophisticated. You don't even understand art. And so protesters gathered at the museum to object to the work. And one of them says he wants to get the smut and pornography taken out of the thing, the museum. But some of these citizens go there and they say, oh, no, this is just art. It's art to show Jesus in a sex act with another man with the word orgasm next to them. And you really shouldn't stamp on our freedom of expression, say the artists. In fact, the director of the museum says the controversy has attracted people to the exhibit. And we invite all people to come regardless of your opinion, she says. Isn't that so advanced? Isn't that so liberal and so accepting and tolerant? Isn't that? But if you say one word about the threat of radical Islam, you might even be banned from Britain. You might even not be allowed to go into the great nation of England for the dental work that they're so famous for. You might not be able to go there for the famous cuisine. But you've got an Islamist named Shuderi who says one day the flag of Islam will fly over the White House. He's not been banned from England. You want to hear him? He was just on ABC News. They won't come to Michael Savage. They don't want my opinion. But listen to clip 12 from ABC News. Listen right now.
We do believe as Muslims the East and the West will one day be governed by the Sharia. Indeed, we believe that one day the flag of Islam will fly over the White House. Indeed, there's even a narration of the Prophet where he said, the Day of Judgment will not come until a group of my ummah conquer the White House.
And he's allowed in England. He's revered and protected by the Bobbies. The Bobbies, isn't that such a quaint term? The Bobbies don't even have guns because the British are so advanced as a society. The British are just so advanced, all the liberals hold England up as a model. What an advanced society. They're so nonviolent. It's just such a wonderful nation. The Bobbies don't even have guns. So these viruses come into the country and they metastasize. The viruses have 16 children on welfare, and they take it out of the hide of the British working man, and if someone says a word, they're called a racist or a bigot, and they're fined by the Bobbies. In fact, about 2 months ago, there was a service in England, if you remember, for the war dead, boys who had been killed by these bastards in Afghanistan, and they were having a service for them. And these viruses came and spit on the coffins, spit on the flags, insulted them. And the Bobbies protected them from the skinheads. The Bobbies arrested the skinheads in England. The boy on the graves of the war dead. That's called a society upside down. That's called a society not in crisis, but a society in extremists. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they're not much different than this country. They're not much too far. They're not further along than we are. We're right there. Just take a look at who's running our security apparatus in this country. Take a look at the TV shows they go on. Take a look at who they think the national threats are posed by. Art exhibit depicting Jesus in a sex act sparks outrage in Colorado. Outrage, but no violence, no real anger. And then they're mocked, those who are angered by this. Angered. They're mocked. They're mocked. But a poor preacher wanted to burn a Quran because of the Ground Zero Mosque and other reasons, and he was called every name under the sun. He was told by the FBI who visited him, don't do that. Don't do that. But the FBI, what are they doing about the mosques in this country who may have the next Choudhary or whatever his name, Adam Choudhary? Are they visiting the mosques and say, cool your rhetoric, Imam? We don't want to hear any more about the Sharia law here in this country. Stop it, or we'll throw you out of the country. We'll arrest you for sedition. I kind of doubt it. You think the FBI is visiting any radicals who want to send their sons over to some training camp? I would think not. No, not under this administration, not with Obama in the White House. I don't think so at all. So whether we are in the last days of Pompeii or so is a matter of conjecture. Who knows, really? I don't have a crystal ball. All I have is a Bible. And as I started the show today, I said to you, the same way I begin every show this week, I haven't done it in a while. I put my hand on the Bible like I'm in a court of law. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. I go on the book tour tomorrow. I'm having the Bible with me. I'm not holding it up because it'll be mocked like this picture of Jesus is mocked. You understand who runs the media, don't you? Now, I may be banned in Britain, and I may be banned by Fox News, but I'm not banned on the Savage Nation. And so long as I am on this band, and so long as you tune into this band, you're going to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. I'm Michael Savage. God bless America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of course, today is the day before Christmas for me. It's the night before Christmas, because I need you to go to bookstores tomorrow and to demand a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. The Savage Army must act to stop the Democrats before it is too late. What is my book about? Stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. Now let's focus on the security aspects. We know about the national debt. But here we have Muslim terrorists threatening to blow up targets throughout Europe and America. And they won't even say Islam or Muslim. Have you noticed that, Beowulf? Not a word about Islam or Muslims? Can you believe this? They said that 8 Germans were arrested in Hamburg. 8 Germans, Beowulf. Again, trying to stir up hatred against Germany. No, it's frightening, Beowulf. This is insanity. Well, that's why the terrorists are laughing at us. Anyway, in my book, there's a chapter called Obama's War on the Military and on National Security. And you really need to focus on this to understand how bad it really is. People have not really gone into this in the way I have in Trickle Up Poverty. They have to understand that his war is not a war against radical Islam as much as it is a war against our own military and our own national security. I open the chapter with a quote from a dumb singer who said, "I think war is never the answer to solving any problems. The best way to solve problems is not to have enemies." You hear this, Beowulf? That's the liberal answer to this.
Geniuses of the left.
Of course, they have enemies, don't they? They've declared the Tea Party as their enemy. That's their real enemy.
Well, making war on the Tea Party is okay by them.
Now, I have some real questions today, but I want to talk first about something I've discovered, which is this. Deep conservatism versus small conservatism. You see, back in the 60s, when the environmental movement was getting underway, there was a movement to clean up trash along highways, clean up streets and roads, pick up, you know, garbage off the highway. And the people who did it were well-meaning, and they called themselves ecologists. But later on, there emerged a much more serious movement of environmentalists, for good or for bad, and they wanted to go beyond just fixing superficial environmental problems. They wanted to try and rid the toxins from foods and waters, and they did a very good job up to a point. Now, they overdid it in some areas, as we well know, but they understood it was more than surface dirt that had to be cleaned up in order to save the planet and save mankind. And these environmentalists called themselves deep ecologists, and they were doing what was known as deep ecology. Today, we have the same thing in politics. We have conservatives with a little c, like O'Reilly, Hannity, and Limbaugh. These are all small conservatives. What they are doing is cleaning up the trash on the sides of the roads. And then there are deep conservatives with a big C like Michael Savage, who are going after the systemic problems, the root of the problems, trying to get the real toxins out of society. Now there's a big difference between a little C and a big C. Little conservatives and big conservatives, as I've spelled out on the show on a regular basis for 16 years. This all comes to a head in my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, where the true deep conservatism is spelled out to save America. You know, Harry Reid is a far-left radical. He's sort of like Nancy Pelosi's enabler. He is almost like Nancy Pelosi's skirt, or shall I say Nancy Pelosi's pants. Now Harry Reid has been trying to pose as someone who is moderate because he's running for a re-election and he's in great trouble. Angle is going to beat him in Nevada. It came out that Harry Reid has added the DREAM Act to a defense policy bill the Senate will take up. Now, what is the DREAM Act? The DREAM Act will grant amnesty to illegal aliens who go to college or serve in the military. The DREAM Act is amnesty by another name. It's called the Development, Relief, and Education of Alien Minors Act. In other words, it's a way to get minorities who are Hispanic to vote for Democrats. So Reid now showed his true colors. He said, "I know we can't do comprehensive immigration reform." He said, "So we're going to do this." And Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell called Reid's decision needlessly controversial. The so-called Senate will need 60 votes to take up the bill. And Harry Reid said he doesn't know if he has enough votes. Let's hope that the Democrats understand they're going to be thrown out and never be seen again if they try to grant amnesty to illegal aliens of any age. Harry Reid adds controversial immigration measure to defense bill, and he ties it to a defense policy bill, knowing that defense bills are sacrosanct and that defense bills often pass with bipartisan support. And he knows that not only did he add this to the defense authorization bill, but he also added the repeal of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell to the defense bill. So they're trying to wreck the military on several different levels at once. A, flooding them with overt active homosexuals, and B, trying to flood the military with illegal aliens at the same time. This is your Democrat at work. This is your wonderful, patriotic, loyal Democrat Party at work, catering to non-citizens. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Obamacare is changing medicine, but not in the ways we were told that it would. As the Obama administration travels the world, bowing and apologizing for how powerful our country has become, the banking system, the big pharmaceutical companies have been given free rein to continue business as usual. Joining us now is Robert Scott Bell with an update on what these big pharmaceutical companies are doing. Robert, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be with you and the Savage Nation audience. And there's a story that's really interesting now because you have an apology tour, but not the kind you think of from the Democratic administration. This time, Kathleen Sebelius, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama are apologizing for some pretty horrendous behavior by U.S. scientists and the federal government back in the 1940s. Now, we all know about the story, and I'm sure you've talked about it over the years, the Tuskegee experiments, where they infected these black men with syphilis just to see what would happen. And that was horrific and horrendous, and you think maybe it was an isolated event. Turns out it wasn't. There's a Wellesley College professor who made a heart-stopping discovery a few years ago. It took a few years to come to light that, in fact, the U.S. government endorsed a similar test among Guatemalan peasants, where they infected them with syphilis and gonorrhea, just to see what would happen at the dawn of the era of antibiotics.
Oh, my God.
And unless you think this is an isolated incident, there's, in fact, a lot of evidence that shows these experiments are being exported in different ways around the world as it becomes more cost prohibitive to do medical experiments for new pharmaceutical drugs here in the United States.
What's happening now?
Well, as this test came to light recently and the government had to acknowledge the horrific nature of it and do an apology to the Guatemalan government.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing now there's movements by pharmaceutical industry and advisors to that industry to export these trials that they can no longer do in the United States. There's a guy here, Jean-Pierre Garnier, a former CEO of GlaxoSmithKline, in an interview with Business Week. He said there's no doubt that the cost of doing clinical trials in the U.S. is absolutely prohibitive, and we can save substantially. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars of pure savings by switching some of these trials to other lower-cost countries.
So now they're outsourcing clinical tests as well?
Well, listen to these reasons. We're going to go a little deeper here because they say the ideal is let's export this to India. In fact, there's a U.S. company out of Pennsylvania who's advertising this heavily, and I liken this to guinea pigs because here's what they say. There's Western disease distribution. So we've exported Western diseases to India so they can find similar diseases. Obviously, there's high patient numbers available. They have low cost, no language barriers. Anybody knows if they try to call customer service to a big company, they're going to get somebody in India. But also, this is the key here. They say that patients generally are therapy naive.
Well, what does that actually mean?
Well, therapy naive basically means they're not aware of the risks, even with informed consent. The informed consent, they're not capable of really understanding the risks involved. And India has been recently, as it's become the favored destination of these drug trials, their deaths are mounting almost double each year to these trials. Now, lest you think this is not happening in America, in fact, it is. We can go through the last 2 years in the United States. In October 11th, for instance, Pfizer temporarily halted an enrollment of new patients in a clinical trial on an experimental lung cancer drug because it had a number of fatalities to the drug. Later that same month, Roche announced enrolling phase 3 clinical trials for testing Avastin. This has been a very controversial drug, plus chemotherapy for early-stage breast cancer because actually six of the patients who were given the drug developed heart failure. And we can go on and on right through 2010, a number of cases where I don't think fully informed consent, people really understand the risk involved in pharmaceuticalization of all life and treatment of all disease.
Well, sure, they want to make a pill for everything, including imaginary illnesses.
Which is, you know, to your credit and your research over the years as well, addressing diet, exercise, nutrition, and where we should be going. I recently talked with Michael Steele, interestingly enough, chairman of the Republican National Committee, about this. I said, you know, a winning combination, if somebody in the Republican Party would get their head out of the pill bottles and understand that even before Obamacare, they were in trouble. It wasn't like we had an ideal system before because we already had a medical monopoly. The medical monopoly is very anti-competition. It breeds higher costs, cost-prohibitive things, and then there's not much innovation in a monopoly.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
Well, exactly, and that's what I told Steele. I said, you know, listen, you know, if the Republican Party actually endorsed a concept or, let's say, a platform of health freedom, imagine what that would do to the cost. Imagine that people would have access to natural medicines. Right now, we have people like my dear friend Jonathan Emord, who's beaten the FDA in court 7 times now on the issue of simply getting, for instance, selenium, which is so studied as a trace mineral, in its ability to prevent and reverse cancer. And yet they've been going back and forth with the FDA, refusing to allow any reference to that. Now they actually have got to a point where, well, the FDA says you can do it, but we're going to say we don't agree with all the science. And then there was another bill that was being discussed in the Senate recently that would actually impose a 10-year prison sentence on anybody who made or sold a dietary supplement and linked the label or the website to peer-reviewed scientific literature.
Unbelievable.
Incredible, yes, because they often say that dietary supplements have no science and therefore it's not right. Yet here you've got a number of companies that have the science to support it, and once they come with it, the federal government wants to put you in jail. That you're right, it is absolutely insane. Which leads me to even more insanity, something I would have to call a moment of duh. There's a new study, Michael, that suggests diabetics might benefit more from diet and exercise than drugs.
No, you're making this up.
Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. Last week, they decided to restrict access to the popular drug Avandia due to data suggesting an elevated risk of cardiovascular events, including stroke. So, obviously, now another drug is becoming more dangerous than the disease it's being utilized to treat. And, you know, we've talked before, it's not so much that we're against drugs for everything, but the point is, we literally understand that we're looking at a whole American population that doesn't know anything about nutrition, suffering from severe nutrient deficiencies.
I mentioned a story before about some doctors are recommending statin drugs for little children.
Yeah, and as they recommend statins for children, of course, we recognize that they're literally creating an entire new disease out of thin air, because as you've covered so well on the Savage Nation, cholesterol is not the prime culprit or cause of heart disease. It may be, in fact, protective in keeping people alive. But you're right, it breeds dependence, and that is not an American ideal. In fact, it goes in complete opposition to the concept of the Declaration of Independence, that we should be free to move about the American cabin and innovate and do some wonderful things, which you know can happen in natural medicine and with nutrition. Yet for too long, we've seen both parties corrupt freedom by throwing it out to, let's say, a group that has purchased special access and been granted monopoly. So as I said, Obamacare made things much worse, because now you are supposedly, unless you're Amish or a few of the others that are referenced in their religious beliefs, you supposedly can't say no to medical intervention, which, you know, at least before you could, even though it was still a monopoly status.
That's before Obamacare was forced upon everyone.
So the point is, this will eventually collapse under the weight of the costs, and we're finding out the costs of Obamacare are so beyond prohibitive. The insurance is actually going up. They have these pools they're talking about for pre-existing conditions, and we're talking a few hundred instead of thousands or hundreds of thousands are participating because it's too expensive for them. So they haven't solved the issue of the price, and of course, only in a free market would the price come down, just as we've seen within the medical realm where there is competition.
Well, like what?
Like you have the physician, surgeons, eye surgeons, for instance, utilizing laser therapies for corrective vision, and you see the prices are very competitive and very readily accessible to just about anybody, but yet they don't allow that for any other aspect of healing or medicine.
Exactly.
So as we acknowledge both, we would, the atrocities done in the name of so-called medical science that literally go back to kind of Nazi-like interactions where you would poison or intoxicate or infect people without their knowledge, just so you could see what happens. Maybe you treat them, maybe you don't, which is horrific as far as advancing science, and we couldn't defend it. I wouldn't. Yet we've got, at the same time, Obama, Sebelius, and Hillary Clinton, saying sorry, but yet doing nothing to acknowledge the fact that a lot of this still goes on around the world, and also here the deaths due to iatrogenesis, modern medicine caused deaths, and that can only be reduced not through more regulation, but by simply opening up the marketplace of ideas of natural medicines, get nutrients out there into the public eye, and so that they can access the information freely without having the nanny state say, oh no, we can't have them know that selenium might prevent cancer, and of course then reduce their dependence upon medicines that are completely unaffordable and in many cases may be more dangerous than the diseases that they're originally suffering from.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert.
It's always a great pleasure being on with you and the Savage Nation, Michael. Appreciate the opportunity so very much. And if anybody would like to learn more about these stories, you can go to my website, robertscottbell.com.
The Obama administration is quick to apologize for the wrong things, but where is the apology for not only forcing Obamacare on us, but for plunging America into a debt that our grandchildren are not going to be able to pay back? Remember, as I point out in Trickle Up Poverty, Obama added more to the national debt in the first 19 months than all presidents from Washington through Reagan combined. Take that. That's a bitter pill to swallow for you liberals, isn't it? Look, I know more about nutrition than anybody in radio, and I take my heart and my health seriously, which is why I recommend Iceland Health Omega 3. Other brands don't compare to Iceland Health's purity and potency. Moreover, it doesn't have a fishy or a nasty aftertaste, which I hate. This is the good, good brand. Iceland Health doesn't taste fishy, as I said to you. It's manufactured in its own pharmaceutical-grade facility to ensure quality, purity, and freshness. Look, if you're over 30, you should be taking Iceland Health Omega 3. Why? It helps lower triglycerides, reduce plaque, and improve blood circulation. I have a real PhD in nutrition from the University of California, so I know the difference between high quality and a waste of time. Iceland Health's quality and effectiveness are second to none, and that is why you should be taking it every day. Call 800-376-1126 right now. 800-376-1126. Iceland Health comes with a no questions asked money back guarantee, but you're not going to need it. This product is outstanding. Call 800-376-1126 for the best omega-3s.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
George Bush promises not to attack Obama, and he gave his first speech in Canada. In Canada. He wouldn't dare show his face in America. The man who said that we should have deregulation, no regulation, let the free market
determine the best for the people.
Savage.
Now, you know I've criticized that rubbish from the Republicans for years. I was onto this years ago. I called them liars, the Republicans. I call them phonies. I call them gangsters. What more can I do? Say it again? What, am I going to get a halo for this? You don't know already what's true, that both parties are criminals? 99% of both parties are run by gangsters. It may as well be Mexico. It may as well be living in Mexico. What do you have faith in any of this? You think anyone's going to suffer? They're going to take money away from these criminals? They are the same. They give them the money back. It's a cycle. This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise on this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads on this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stjude.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
The best network marketers in the world all desire three things from their new MLM opportunity. Products that dial into an untapped global phenomenon, to call on their MLM talents and get the good life fast, and to join early so they can quickly enjoy their dreams. Only top MLM professionals can join our new company now. Before we launch, we need top network marketers who can optimize the leads from our radio campaign to an audience of over 30 million. If you are a proven MLM professional who has earned six figures and achieved top ranks in other MLM companies, act now. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. These elite positions will go fast. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. Again, send a text to 74499 and type MLM in the message. Message and data rates may apply.
One of the key points in my book is taking back power from the government. The government has stolen power from the American people in many ways. They've nationalized many private businesses. They've introduced socialized medicine. They've weakened the military through sensitivity training. They've redefined marriage in the name of tolerance. Right? Each time the government steals power from you, a little bit more of your freedom dies. The more powerful the government becomes, the less powerful you are. Obama knows this. You see, Obama's committed to transforming America into a socialist state. I point out that Obama is a naked Marxist. But everywhere Marxism has been tried, it has failed, even in our American universities. Do you know that? But here comes our college teacher president, in love with Marx, while his inner circle are fans of Mao Zedong, the brutal murderer of China. Obama's manufacturing czar Ron Blum, who agrees with Mao that power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And never forget the Mao-loving former White House communications director, Anita Dunn, who turns to the mass murderer of China for inspiration. Ladies and gentlemen, I warn you, trickle-up poverty is the only thing you have between you and the abyss. Read it. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Here's a former spokesman for a banned Muslim terrorist group named Amjem Choudhury, whatever, and what he thinks about his religion of Islam.
Islam has a solution for all of the problems that mankind faces. If you want to live at peace with Muslims, we are quite willing to live at peace with you. But let us remember that history did not begin on 9/11. Before 9/11, the American government bombed...
Let's repeat that.
But let us remember that history did not begin on 9/11.
I believe he's right. History did not begin on 9/11.
Before 9/11, the American government bombed Sudan and Afghanistan. They were supporting the pirate state of Israel. So 9/11 was a reaction.
You may recall the 1998 embassy bombings against American Marines, the attack on the USS Cole by Muslims, and perhaps let's go back 1,000 years. Now listen to this man saying the flag of Islam will fly over the White House. Maybe it already does.
We do believe as Muslims, the East and the West will one day be governed by the Sharia. Indeed, we believe that one day the flag of Islam will fly over the White House.
Stop, wait a minute. Sharia law. We see what that
Indeed,
is.
There's even a narration of the Prophet where he said, the day of judgment will not come until a group of my ummah conquer the White House.
Here's another peaceful group. Listen to sounds from the left-wing so-called One Nation Working Together rally. You hear that liberal hatred?
Do not take my picture.
Don't take my picture.
And I mean it. Do not take my picture. I don't care.
Well, play it again.
You don't take my picture. Don't take my picture, okay? Do not take my picture.
No, don't take a photo of a violent liberal. Because this is a progressive rally, leading us right into the progress of violence. And here's the singer, Deo, Harry Belafonte, and an old hack singer from the 50s.
The greatest threat of all is the undermining of our Constitution and the systematic attack against the inalienable rights of the citizens of this nation, rights that are guaranteed by our Constitution.
And he says that we're destroying the Constitution by actually meeting.
Is the Tea Party.
And trying to retake America from the communist president.
This band of misguided citizens is moving perilously close to achieving villainous ends. This gathering here today is America's wake-up call. The giant called democracy is at last stirring again.
The only thing here that I can take as villainous is some of his singing.
I did deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we won. Live 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
HBO launched a new series that was really heavily touted called Boardwalk Empire. It was an HBO miniseries which was supposed to be as good as The Sopranos. It was one of the most unwatchable shows I've ever seen in my TV life. And I've been watching TV since I'm 5 years old. I watched TV before it was even in households. I watched television when they put magnifiers on the front of the screen. I watched television when Howdy Doody was a household name. And I've seen good TV and I've seen bad TV. And I'm a big fan of The Sopranos. This was, as my father would have said, a stiff. A stiff of the first order. Now, let's start with the lead character, Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi's voice sounds like someone who is on laughing gas. His face looks like he has a medical condition. He is not attractive. In fact, he is an almost carnival-looking man. Buscemi should never have been chosen to play the lead gangster. He was a politician gangster, by the way, who created the kind of corrupt mob in Atlantic City in the 1920s. The first rule of drama is go for good-looking people or compelling people. Steve Buscemi is neither good-looking nor compelling. Steve Buscemi is, at best, a fine B actor. Supporting roles is where he has always shown his best. So that's number one. So the lead actor was horrible in this HBO series. Unwatchable, unbelievable. Everything was wrong. Number two. Allegedly, the series was directed by Martin Scorsese, which I don't doubt as his name is all over it. I can't fault the directing per se, but the story was so garbled, so pointless, and so pat and predictable that it was unwatchable. You had the rich as opposed to the poor in Atlantic City in the 1920s. You saw the humble household with the meal of the poor Irish family, juxtaposed with the rich dining on pheasant and drinking champagne with the hookers in the gambling hall and in the clubs. Every scene could have been predicted before it appeared on the screen. Number three, the constant flashbacks to the 1920s, the music in particular was so grating and so horrible and so unlistenable that I turned the sound off to see if I could even watch it without the sound. It was though Martin Scorsese was trying to create a documentary of the period as opposed to a compelling miniseries for HBO. Now, why am I talking about this new HBO series, Boardwalk Empire? Because this goes to the heart of the problem in America today. Both the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. The princes of Hollywood have forgotten that the people must be seduced into the theaters or onto the couches to watch their productions. Yet they couldn't care less. They are producing series like this for their own entertainment and to reward themselves. In essence, Martin Scorsese, Steve Buscemi, Larry David are all members of the same sorority from Brooklyn or Manhattan going back to the same period. And they think that the whole world can't wait for the next flatulence to emerge from their bowels. Well, I've got news for them. This is unwatchable. I had to turn it off. It was like going to the dentist without anesthesia. I understand it cost $20 million to produce. The set was supposedly a direct copy of the Atlantic City Boardwalk, reconstructed in Brooklyn. All that is quite admirable, but so what? A documentary film about the era would have been more interesting. Now let's take a look at what else HBO has to offer. They showcase a left-wing hackneyed doper named Bill Maher, who is at best a bad entertainer. But who was entertained by him? Certainly not the majority of the American people. They detest his anti-American politics. So who is it that watches him? Why, it's the same crowd that seems to think that Steve Buscemi can play a lead role. It's the same crowd that thinks Larry David's mocking of Jesus are entertaining. And so therefore, this is the crisis that America is facing, where the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. This is Michael Savage, and I approve of my review and monologue.
Savage.
More notes for the Savage Nation. These are questions I raised earlier. I'll ask him again in this hour. Should I bring Liv Teddy the Poodle with me into the radio TV studio when I do my TV interviews this week? Do you think that Teddy would distract from my message or humanize my message? Would I get complaints from the American Federation of Dog Labor, AFDL, if I use Teddy to sell my book without compensation? And do you think that PETA will protest if I bring Teddy into the TV studio? Here are some TV interview lines. At the end of the interview, I'm going to hold Teddy up and say, Teddy says, keep America from going to the dogs. Teddy says, come on, America, don't roll over for Obama. Teddy says, keep the liberals on a short leash by trickle-up poverty. That's a good one. You want me to play UFO tapes? I'll play that if you'd like, if you want to get into that. The wackies in the ex-Air Force. Well, what are they selling, a book? 50 years later, you know what I love? All the brave men in the military, once they get their pensions, they come out and tell us in 1952 they saw UFOs. Why don't you tell it to me when I was 10? You know, you just come out and, okay, here we saw UFOs in 1952. It would have changed my life. What are you waiting now, like 60 years later? Who were these guys from the Air Force with the UFOs? Retired Air Force officers discussing UFO sightings in a press conference at the National Press Club in D.C. on Monday. All retired now, living on big fat pensions. Here, listen to clip 13.
In December 1980, early in the morning, several of our security policemen discovered strange lights in the forest in East Anglia, just outside the back gate of RAF Woodbridge. Three patrolmen, Sergeant Peniston, Airman Burroughs, and Airman Cabana-Sack, actually were dispatched into the forest and approached a craft. They reported it being triangular, approximately 3 meters on a side, dark metallic in appearance with strange markings. They observed it for a period of time, and it very quickly and silently vanished at high speed.
All right, and?
2 nights later at the family Christmas party, We were interrupted. The on-duty flight commander for the security police squadron, Lieutenant Bruce England, came and approached the base commander and I. He was white as a sheet. He said, it's back. We said, what's back? He said, the UFO. Well, we still were, I should say, non-believers at that point. I was taken to the supposed site. We find indentations approximately an inch and a half deep, approximately 6 to 8 feet on a side, and radiation of 8 to 9 times normal background radiation. Not enough to be dangerous to somebody, but significant. We also find broken branches on the trees.
You're listening to Colonel Charles Holt, retired, telling you about UFO sightings in a press conference at the National Press Club in D.C. on Monday. This is what they have time for at the National Press Club. Not about the loss of freedom of speech in America. Not about the fact that one member of America's media has been banned from entering a Western nation, Michael Savage. That didn't happen. That doesn't exist. I was never invited to even give my side of the story, either in Britain or the United States of America. No, instead they're going to talk to some Air Force officer trying to peddle a book. This is unbelievable to me. So we could play more of this. They're extraterrestrials. Who knows? Now, it gets best now on clip 27. You got to hear the end of this speech.
Recently, in the last year or two, the Catholic Church has said publicly, you know, hey, it's okay. ETs can exist. They're our brothers, and they are theologically saying it's okay.
Let's hope they don't like little boys. That's all I can say.
And if the Catholic Church says it, it's got to have a big stick, I would think, as far as the Western world.
Well, please, this is a family show, mister. Cut it out. That's retired Air Force Colonel Dwayne Arneson. Stop with the big stick, okay? It's a family program. So now because the Catholic Church has said ETs can exist, I'm supposed to say, therefore, it's okay to believe they exist. All I can say is I pray that the ETs, if they do exist, have a better set of morals than 3% of the priests. Let's put it to you that way. What's the point of this? What is the point of this? Why are we listening to this rubbish now? If they're here, they're here. If they're not here, they're not here. So last night here in the Bay Area of San Francisco, since I've been away, and the air is so beautiful, it was kissing me last night. And it was a warm night, but still like a subtext of cool. So the show was over, and I threw the top down in the convertible. I took a ride down to Sausalito. Everyone knows Sausalito. It's a beautiful little town, you know. I mean, on a picture postcard, everyone wants a tourist licking ice cream cones. You know, it's a tourist trap, but beautiful. Fishing village. No one's fished in Sausalito in 50 years, but a fishing village. That's how they sell it. So there's a place I go to seldom. It's an Italian restaurant. Not bad, really. I figure if I'm going to buy a beer, I'll buy it there instead. You know, it's a little more upscale than the dumps I usually go into. I pull up in front. I get out with Teddy. I go up to the bar. And I sit at the bar, which opens up to the outside. I order a beer. I said, you got a Heineken? The guy says, no, we have the Italian Heineken. It's better, called Moretti. I said, it's horrible. I don't want it. It's garbage. He says, you know what? I agree with you. He's a Sicilian bartender. He said, it's horrible. I get a migraine just saying Moretti. So, all right. So I got a Pilsner Urquell. Not my favorite either. I mean, it's allegedly a good beer, but it's so fattening and filling and troublesome. I don't like it. But I want to be sociable. So I grab a beer. Next to me is a fat guy, maybe in his 60s, conning a woman in her 50s, like on a date, a cheap date at that, because it's at the bar already. When they're at the bar, you know already he's cheap on the dinner. He bought her a drink, big deal. He bought her a glass of wine. It took him to, you could see already, you know, let's go for a wine, not for a whole dinner. So I saw that was from the get-go. And I'm not listening. I'm trying not to. And he's going on and on about how he can read characters and personalities and how he can read cards, and he knows what people are going to be and do. And she's not saying much. She looks like a middle-aged woman who met him online, and she's trying to be pleasant and polite. And I could tell it was not good. And he don't shut up. He's loud. And he doesn't – you have to listen to him. He makes you – I try to say, you know, Michael, can't you go out one night? I say to myself, can you not react? Can you not listen? Can you try to tune him out like normal people? The answer is no, I couldn't. I'm gagging on the beer. I'm looking at Teddy, he's looking at me. So luckily at one of the tables, there's a woman we know in the family with her young child and her sister and her mother-in-law. I start talking to him. Then I go back, and he's still doing it. And then he gets to this point. He says to her, very often people come to me when I can tell when they're going to die. He says, now this is in a restaurant. And loud. He says, I know when people are going to die, and I say, don't be frightened, you're going to a good rest. So I said to myself, either I can say to him, hey, mister, you know, you really are bumming me out. Shut up. Just shut up. I couldn't do that because he has a right to speak as I do. And it would have erupted into a verbal brawl at the very least. I didn't want to do it. So I have a choice. So like a pygmy, I retreat. And I come back 10 minutes later. He's still going on about the dead and the near dead. So I go to a little table, and I order sardines. All I want with the beer is fresh sardines, would you believe? Not like from a can. These are the real Italian, you know, really good. So that was my dinner, sardines and a beer and a blowhard talking about reading cards and death. And Teddy will never forget it. Sort of a jazz poem. There's no beginning, no middle, no end, other than what? What would you draw from that story? There's nothing poignant. So I'll tell you another one. Today, I go to the lunch place in San Francisco, the Chinese that glues the lips together. I take a walk to Levi's Plaza. Now, Levi's doesn't seem to make any money these days selling jeans. These days, the company is run like a university, where the workers walk around, and if you say the word profit, they go to the labor relations board. And the new slogan of Levi's is "Go Forth," F-O-R-T-H. And the billboards for Levi's show the backsides of people tightly on people's behinds, their jeans, tightly fitted on people's rumps. So I look at the slogan, "Go Forth." And I realized this was a mistake. Like 20, 30 years ago, they tried to sell a Chevy Nova in South America, and it didn't sell at all because the word Nova means no go in Spanish. Well, it's the same thing with "Go Forth" and pictures of people's behinds. Because if one were given to graffiti, which I am not, all a person would have to do is take out an A and go forth with people's behinds facing you, blank out the H, change the O to an A, and that would be the dead-end slogan, or shall we say the bum-end slogan for Levi's jeans. And that's another story with no beginning, middle, or shall I say there is an end to this one.
Savage.